वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम थैंक यू श्रीमद् भागवत गीता चैप्टर 15 And we start from text number 7 and go to text number 11. Okay, 7 to 11. Okay, please repeat after me. Mama evangsho jiva loke.
Mama evangsho jiva loke.
Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha
Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha
Manashashtanindriyani
Manashashtanindriyani
Prakritisthani Karshati
Prakritisthani Karshati
The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses which include the mind. Text 8. Shariram yadvapnoti
Shariram yadvapnoti
Yachapyutkramati shvaraha
Yachapyutkramati shvaraha
Krihitvaitani sangyate
Krihitvaitani sangyate
Vayurgandhani vashayat
Vayurgandhani vashayat
The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha
Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha
Rasanam ghranam eva cha
Rasanam ghranam eva cha
Adhishthaya manashchayam
Adhishthaya
Vishayanupasevate. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. Utkramantam sthitam vapi.
Utkramantam sthitam vapi.
Bhunjanam va gunanvitam
Bhunjanam va gunanvitam
Vimudhananupashyanti
Vimudhananupashyanti
Pashyanti jnana chakshushah
Pashyanti jnana chakshushah
The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Yatanto yoginashchainam
Yatanto yoginashchainam
Pashyantyatmanyavasthitam
Pashyantyatmanyavasthitam
Yatantopyakritatmano
Yatantopyakritatmano
Nainam pashyantyachetasah
Nainam pashyantyachetasah
The endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly, but those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, although they may try to. Now let's go back and read the purport of text number 7. The translation again. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. The purport here is quite long, but it's very, very nice. It's very, quite a good summary of everything. So please follow carefully. In this verse, the identity of the living being is clearly given. The living entity is the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, eternally. It is not that he assumes individuality in his conditional life, and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. He is eternally fragmented. It is clearly said, Sanatanaha. According to the Vedic version, the Supreme Lord manifests and expands himself in innumerable expansions, of which the primary expansions are called Vishnu Tattva, and the secondary expansions are called the living entities. In other words, the Vishnu Tattva is the personal expansion, and the living entities are the separated expansions. By his personal expansion, he is manifested in various forms, like Lord Rama, Nrsimhadev, Vishnumurti, and all the predominating deities in the Vaikuntha planets. The separated expansions, the living entities, are eternally servitors. The personal expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the individual identities of the Godhead, are always present. Similarly, the separated expansions of living entities have their identities. As fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, the living entities also have fragmental portions of his qualities, of which independence is one. Every living entity, as an individual soul, has his personal individuality and a minute form of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul, and by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In either case, he is qualitatively eternal, as the Supreme Lord is. In his liberated state, he is freed from this material condition, and he is under the engagement of transcendental service unto the Lord. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by the material modes of nature, and he forgets the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As a result, he has to struggle very hard to maintain his existence in the material world. The living entities, not only human beings and the cats and dogs, but even the greater controllers of the material world, Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu, are all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. They are all eternal, not temporary manifestations. The word garishati, struggling or grappling hard, is very significant. The conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound up by the false ego, and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him in this material existence. When the mind is in the mode of goodness, his activities are good. When the mind is in the mode of passion, his activities are troublesome. And when the mind is in the mode of ignorance, he travels in the lower species of life. It is clear, however, in this verse, that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body, with the mind and the senses. And when he is liberated, this material covering perishes. But his spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. The following information is there in the Madhyandinayana Shruti. Sava esha brahmanishtha idam shariram martyam atisrijya brahma bhisampadya brahmana pashyati brahmana shunoti brahmanai vedam sarvam anubhavati. It is stated here that when a living entity gives up this material embodiment and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body. And in his spiritual body, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face, and he can understand the Supreme Personality as he is. From Smriti also it is understood, Vasanti yatra purusha sarve vaikuntha murtaya. In the spiritual planets, everyone lives in bodies featured like the Supreme Personality of Godheads. As far as bodily construction is concerned, there is no difference between the part and parcel living entities in the expansions of Vishnumurti. In other words, at liberation, the living entity gets a spiritual body by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words Mamaivangsha, fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are also very significant. The fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is not like some material broken part. We have already understood in the second chapter that the spirit cannot be cut into pieces. This fragment is not materially conceived. It is like matter. It is not like matter, which can be cut into pieces and joined together again. That conception is not applicable here. Because the Sanskrit word Sanatan, eternal, is used. The fragmental portion is eternal. It is also stated in the beginning of the second chapter that in each and every individual body, the fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is present. Dehino smin yatha dehe. That fragmental portion, when liberated from the bodily entanglement, revives its original spiritual body in the spiritual sky in a spiritual planet and enjoys association with the Supreme Lord. It is, however, understood here that the living entity, being the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is qualitatively one with the Lord, just as the parts and parcels of gold are also gold. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayati Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Vishwanam. So I get this distinct feeling or sensation that there's someone sitting behind me. Is that correct? My humble request, if everyone can sit in front of you, it's easier to communicate with eye contact. Sorry. Thank you. Okay, so this is a very impressive purport by Srila Prabhupada. Just a quick review. We were saying how in this chapter, Krishna describes all three of his energies: the spiritual, material, and marginal energies. And then he places himself, the Supreme Person, Purushottama, above all three, as the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in today's class, we've covered all the verses relating to the Lord's marginal energy. Now, the word marginal is important. We can spend a minute on this word marginal, because common English parlance, right, the word marginal has kind of changed meaning as what it means today than what it means as the way Srila Prabhupada uses it. Can anyone say what the word marginal means today, just in kind of day-to-day usage?
Incomplete, not the standard.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of marginal means, incomplete, not to the standard, or a bit... not so consequential, not so central, right? So you can see it's the reason this meaning is there is because it comes from the word margin. Just like on a page, you have the margins, right? So the margin is on the edge, and it's on the edge means it's not of so much consequence. It's not so important. It's just like you have in books, you have marginalia, or in manuscripts, which is some authors, some scribes transcribing something, and then he has some thought and he writes it off to the side. Right? So it's something kind of minor that that's not of so much consequence, right? It's marginal. That's not the meaning of the word marginal here when we say the marginal potency. Rather, it goes back to an older meaning in which the word margin, margin means the line or the border between two things. So the margin on a piece of paper is the border between the part you have the text, right, and the edge of the page. So that's the margin, or the part you don't write on. So it's a border, it's a line. And the marginal energy is that energy of the Lord which sits on the border, sits on the line. So you can say it's kind of like a borderline energy. But then again, the word borderline also is taken on a not so bad as marginal, but it's taken on some kind of alternate meaning in English. Just kind of not quite correct. It's borderline.
Meridian.
Meridian. Yes, meridian. Yeah. Meridian, that's good. So it's in Sanskrit, tatastha means it's on tata, means the bank. So if in English we had a word that meant sitting on the bank, standing on the bank, on the verge, on the bank, that would be more correct. So on the bank of river. And what's the quality of the bank or the shore? What's the main, what kind of defines the bank of the river or the shore of the ocean? What do you call the shore? Would you call Idaho the shore of the Pacific Ocean? No. Why not? Or would you call... What do you call the shore? What does the shore mean? What defines the shore? How much is the shore?
Sometimes.
Exactly. Good. Is that piece of land which is sometimes dry and sometimes underwater. That's called the shore. That's the bank. Right? So buoyancy cannot be part, although it's on one side of the ocean, you can't call it the shore, the extended shore, because there's no possibility whatsoever that will be overcome by Pacific Ocean water. The shore is that much, the waves come up, and then they go back. They come up, that's the shore. The tide rises, so that much you can call the shore, the tide subsides. So we're tatastha, which means we're on the shore. And what that means is like the land on the shore, we're sometimes covered and sometimes uncovered. Covered by what? Sometimes we're overcome by the Lord's material energy. And sometimes we're on dry land. And we're okay, we're in the Lord's spiritual energy. So that's our nature, going in and out. And our goal has to be, the idea has to be that instead of being marginal, instead of being on the shore, we want to work our way up to dry land as far as possible. So we stay high and dry. No matter how high the tide rises, we're still safe, we're still dry. And sometimes the tide can rise very far, very big. Just like I was in near Mumbai once on the beach, and every day we had a little cottage on the shore of the ocean, and every day you'd see how far the tide would go. Just it was amazing. It's like you could literally walk out into the middle of the ocean when there was low tide. It'd leave. One time we were walking on the shore and we found this huge what's it called? These flat things. No, it's a type of fish that's flat and on the bottom and kind of like this and got eyes up front and long tail. Stingray. Stingray, that's what it is. And it was stingray. And the stingray was there on dry ground. It was dead. Obviously, when the tide had gone low, it had been left on dry land. So either way you want to look at it. If you consider the water to be the Lord's spiritual energy, then we want to always stay in the water, like the fish. We don't want to get left on the land. If you consider the land to be the Lord's spiritual energy, then we want to go on high ground, not get drowned in the water. So either way, we want a permanent fixed position. But right now we're on the shore, and most of the time we're underwater, actually. Now, in these verses, Krishna is giving the whole, you can say, the history of our history, the history of the living entity, the history of each one of us. Each one of us can read our story in these verses. And Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, very, very beautiful, nice purport, he goes over this whole history, where we started, where we are, and where we want to go. So here it is in brief. Okay, once upon a time, we were up there in the spiritual world with Krishna in the kingdom of God. And everything was wonderful, everything was beautiful. And we read last time, Natad bhase te suryo na shashanko na pavaka yat gatvana nevartante tad dhamma param. It's a place of permanence, of illumination. You don't need the sun there, the moon, the stars, or electricity, or fire. All these things are self-brilliant. And it's a land full of loving relationships between the Lord and his devotees. Always full of bliss and happiness, sat chit and ananda, eternity, knowledge and bliss. In this perfect situation, just because we are creatures who like to walk the shore, you can say, somehow or other, we developed this sense of independence, of wanting to enjoy separately from the Lord, of wanting to take the position of the Lord for ourselves. Why should Krishna get to be the center of everyone's attention? Why do all the mothers of Vrindavan, why are they completely overcome with love for Krishna? Why does Krishna get to enjoy all the gopis? Why does he get to dance in the rasa dance? Why can't I be in the center of the rasa dance? Why can't I steal butter like Krishna does? So we get the sense of, I want Krishna's position. And as soon as we get that desire, the slightest flickering of desire, we lose our position in the spiritual world. because the spiritual world is not suitable for anyone who has a rebellious tendency. And Krishna, not out of anger or some kind of a hatred for us or whatever, just out of his compassion, actually, out of his kindness, he arranges things so that we can fulfill our desires. We can forget our natural position as the Lord's servitors, jiveda swarupoye krishneta nityadas, forget that we're meant to be servants of Krishna, and instead imagine or play like we ourselves are Krishna, like we're the masters. So at that point, we fall down to this material world. Or as Hanuman Swami would say, we jump down to the material world. There's an important difference between falling and jumping. Right? Falling kind of implies that you were pushed or something and you kind of accidentally tumbled. You're, you know, kind of screaming on the way down. Jumping indicates that you want to go. You dive. Right? You dive into that. So it's a big difference, right? If you fall into the deep end of the pool, that's one experience. But if you dive into the deep end of the pool, that's another experience. So we've jumped to this material world rather than fall. We know that you cannot fall from the spiritual world in the sense that no one accidentally kind of tumbles down. Krishna says, yad gatva na nivartante tad dhamma paramam. One who goes, yad gatva na nivartante, he doesn't come back. So there's no question of accident or slipping. Rather, we use our free will and we say, okay, I want to come down. So Krishna says, okay, there you go. There's the place for you. Look there. And we jump. We jump away from the spiritual world. As soon as we jump from the spiritual world, in order to fulfill our desires, a transformation takes place. Namely, that we all have an eternal spiritual body full of having transcendental senses, senses that are able to perceive transcendental things, spiritual things, and that never decay, that are sharp and always fresh, awake. But these senses and these spiritual bodies are no good in the material world where we want to enjoy. So as soon as we jump from the spiritual world to the material, what happens? Immediately, everything is covered, clamped. It's as if someone were to come to you and put a blindfold on your eyes, put earplugs in our ears, put a gag in our mouth, completely cover our skin with a straitjacket. Everything is plugged up when we come to this material world. Everything is. All our spiritual senses are dulled. They're covered. And what are we given instead? We're given a set of goggles, this virtual reality. You get this, and you wear special gloves, there's sensors and connections and everything. And you're placed in this whole world of virtual reality, which is all, you can say, computer generated. It's real in the sense that we experience it, but unreal in the sense that there's nothing actually there. We talked about this at length in the last two classes. So we get this whole reflection reality, this whole virtual reality. Maya is a virtual reality. Everything's we're in a and we're moving about in this material world, and we're thinking, we're feeling things, and you know, holding on to things, and experiencing, tasting things. But for someone who's not plugged up like we are, they look at us and we look incredibly stupid. It's like if you see someone in a virtual reality box, they look stupid. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, what's the guy doing? Because he's in his own world, his own illusory world. Everything's closed, everything's plugged up. And rather, his senses are all substituted. They're circuited differently to be able to enjoy this material world. Now, when we first come into this material world, we have this desire to enjoy, but we still maintain some of our spiritual consciousness, our elevated consciousness. We're in the mode of goodness. But as the more time we spend here, in life after life, we become more and more and more covered over. Our plugs become deeper and deeper. Our involvement in the virtual reality becomes deeper and deeper and deeper. And we forget more and more and more of the reality we came from. So the soul becomes more and more involved in this new reality. To the extent that it can't remember then where we came from, what we're doing here, how we got into the situation. And we take this reality to be ourselves. This conception of taking this reality to be ourselves is called, in Sanskrit it is called, or in English, this false identification is called ahankara, the false ego. This is who I am. This is my false identification. And with this ahankara, we get a false mind and intelligence. And all of these things work to solidify this false ego we have, this false identification we have. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he's giving the example here in the verse 8. He's saying the living entity, he passes through these different virtual realities from one area of experience to another. Like aroma being carried by air. You have some fresh air blowing. And the air itself is pure. The fragrance of fresh air is so nice. But if that air passes over a rose garden, it takes on the fragrance of that rose garden. And when we smell it, we experience roses. There are no roses in the air, right? But we experience roses. Or if it goes over a garbage dump, then we experience the stench of the stench of the garbage, right? We experience the garbage. Although again, there's no garbage in the air. So in the same way, the spirit soul is actually pure, is actually untouched. We're like Krishna, we're made of eternity, knowledge and bliss, and we're transcendental. But as we blow over, we go through different bodies, we take the aromas of the bodies we're in. We identify with those situations. And thus, we develop certain conceptions and we take on certain features. Another example that Prabhupada gives in the purport to the verse after that, he says, it's just like water also. Water by nature is pure. The taste of water is pure, it's very nice. But you can mix various colorings in it, or various flavors in it, and it changes. Changes colors, changes flavors. So you have Coca-Cola, you have 7-Up, you have Fanta, or whatever it is. This is all water, right? But it's water adulterated with different things. And thus, it causes different effects. It creates different flavors. So the same way the spirit soul is pure, but as we move from body to body, we take on different conceptions according to that body. All of these conceptions, these ideas put together, what are they called? The conceptions we carry from life after life, what are they altogether? We said our identification with our situation around us is the false ego, ahankara. What is the conceptions that we gain from this? Yes, but altogether that whole corpus of conceptions is the intelligence and the mind and that's it. Intelligence, mind, and then the false ego, which we said earlier. Right? These three things are called the subtle body, the sukshma sharira. And they are the aromas that Krishna is talking about here, that the living entity gathers. So the living entity is like the air. Our subtle body is the aromas. Right? The aroma is not referring to the physical situation we're in, because we don't carry that from life to life. We leave it behind, right? But what we carry with us is the aromas. And depending on the type of conception, type of subtle body we create, according to that, we get a material body, a physical body. Now, this is a very important point to remember, because very often, the common way of thinking is that we have a particular physical body, and according to the physical body, we have a certain mental makeup, right? We have a certain mental conception. Just like if I'm young, right? Then because my body is young, therefore I have a certain, youthful makeup, right? Or if there's a dog here, right? Because he's got four legs and a powerful sense of smell and sharp ears, a good sense of sound. Therefore, he's behaving like a dog. He's got the mindset of a dog. So normally we deduce the subtle body from the gross body. We think that the subtle body is a product of the gross body. Because he's got this body, therefore he behaves in such a way. Therefore he thinks in such a way. What Krishna is saying here, that it's actually the opposite. It's the subtle body that is primary, that is most important. And the subtle body creates or leads the spirit soul to a physical body according to it. So the subtle body basically produces the physical body. In other words, if in our life now we develop a certain type of consciousness, we develop a certain type of mentality, we will receive a body in our next life that's exactly suitable to that mentality, that's exactly suitable to that conception. So we spend our lives behaving like animals, then in our next life we will receive the body of an animal. So the type of conception we develop, the subtle body, that'll lead us to a type of physical body. So in that sense, the subtle body is more important, it's more substantial than the gross physical shell we're in. Right. Now, this subtle body, it undergoes a lot in this material world. Krishna is saying in the seventh verse, he's saying, Mamaivangsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manashashta anindriyani prakriti sthani karshati. That the subtle body, like I said, mind, intelligence, ego, and the mind is actually the resting place of the senses. So once again, we think of the senses as these things, right? The eyes, the ears, the nose, the skin. We think this is the senses. But these are only the receptors. Receptors of the senses. The senses are actually subtle, and they are residing in where? The mind. The mind is the repository of the senses. So Krishna is saying that the living entity, life after life, is going through different bodies, taking a subtle body with him. And everywhere he's struggling with the six senses, including the mind. Prakriti sthani karshati. The word karshati means a hard struggle. The living entity is really fighting with these senses and with this mind and this intelligence it has. Why fighting? Why struggling? When we come down to this material world, we have to experience so much suffering, so much pain, so much difficulty, that our subtle body is constantly struggling with the things we're encountering. And this whole struggle of material existence is what forms our subtle body. It molds our subtle body into a particular shape, into a form, that then leads us to our next situation. This happens not just between lives, but even within this life. The experiences we have mold our subtle body, our mind, our intelligence, into a particular personality, into a particular type of behavior, into a particular intelligence, which leads us to be attracted by certain situations, to perform certain activities, and to enter certain atmospheres, certain situations. Our struggle in this material world is so great that if one were to somehow be able to see someone's physical, subtle body in a three-dimensional form, take a picture of it, you know what it would come out like looking? It'd be very, very grotesque looking. Very grotesque. If we were able to see, like we can see our physical body, say you could take a picture of our subtle body, and somehow translate they have sensors and stuff. They can make heat maps of different parts of the world and areas of region of heat, and you can kind of three-dimensional. So if you were able to make a map of the mind, the intelligence, kind of put it in a three-dimensional form, it'd be very, very grotesque looking. Because the living entity, in all its different lifetimes, in its subtle body, has been through so much struggle, so much suffering, that practically everyone in this material world is a mental case. Everyone. This material world is, Prabhupada says, a madhouse. It's a madhouse. And you can just, just go to anyone on the street. Randomly you can select anyone who's been around for a few years. Any person you approach in this material world, everyone has been through some kind of traumatic experience in their life. Just in this one life. You ask someone what they've been through. Tell me all you've been through in life. And you get a list that never ends. For someone's been homeless, had nothing to eat, right? I used to be on the street, I've been through so much, right? Someone's been jobless for months and months and months, couldn't do anything. Someone's seen someone very close to them, a loved one, die, right? And the trauma that causes. Someone's been put through a torturous situation, or been through prison, or someone's been abused, or everyone. There's like some kind of a statistic that in the United States, what was it? 1 in 3 people or something has some kind of a mental illness, right? Something like that. Yeah, the 50% of people. But that's the case with the whole material world. In some sense, you can argue that that's just because we've become so good at classifying different types of nerdity or neuroses. We've been good at, there's all sorts of neuroses and addictions, right? We've been so, there's all sorts of new addictions. The American Psychological Association has recently recognized that, there's an addiction to smelling flowers. Someone's addicted to smelling flowers. A new recognition, there's a neurosis in humanity. We've got us, we've become very good at classifying these things. And the fact is, it's there. Everyone is a mental case. Why? Because we've been struggling life after life after life. Tell anyone and to describe their life experience, it'll be full with traumatic events. And if not, it means they haven't been around long enough. Now, that's just one life. Take that kind of experience. Take what you think are forming experiences in your life and multiply that by thousands and millions of lifetimes. And you can just imagine how grotesque our subtle body is, what it's been through, what it looks like. It's completely beat up. Just think, if you were supposed able to look at the subtle body of a dog, for example, see the subtle body. The spirit soul is the same, right? It's only the subtle body that's different. And it's the subtle body that gives him the body, the physical body of a dog. So imagine if you're able to see a subtle body of a dog. What would it look like, this subtle body? If you were able to make a picture of it. It probably, that dog, the subtle body of the dog, would probably have a huge nose. Because all the senses of the dog, all the subtle body of the dog is focused on the nose and on the ears. Right? So to have huge nose, huge ears, and very small eyes. Right? Yes? And it would have, I don't know how you would display these things, right? But it'd have an irritation at people coming near it and coming, threatening its property. A real sense of paranoia and protection, protectiveness. This tendency to bark and to protect. At the same time, it would have a lot of loyalty, a lot of fidelity. These two qualities, protectiveness and loyalty, fidelity. These qualities would go well together. And you can just think, what this shape would look like of the dog. And each one of us, we can make a picture of ourselves. This would be some kind of a therapeutic process. This is a healing process. Exactly. It could further your neurosis. This is why Krishna, he does us the big, big favor of allowing us to forget what we've been through in our previous lives. Because if we were able to dredge all of that up through past life remembrances, hypnosis, and like that, the stuff we would come up with would be so traumatic that we wouldn't be able to live this life. As it is for so many people, the experiences of only this life make it difficult to continue living, right? What to speak of dredging up the experiences of previous lives? It'd be so difficult to live. So we can do that in some private time, no one's looking. Make a picture of our subtle body. What do we focus on? What of our represent things? And we see, I'm actually grotesque. This material body I have is horrible. You know, it's packaged somehow in a nice frame. You know, basically nice frame. But what's inside? It's all twisted.
In terms of what is quite dated now, in psychology, it would show the brain. It would show how much of the brain is donated to the teeth, to the ears, to the eyes, and the breathing organs.
Yeah.
It actually showed that in this diagram.
So there's a very good thing, right? You can map the body, the subtle body, according to the mind. So if you made a picture of yourself based on how much of your mind or brain, we don't know about the mind, but how much of the brain is dedicated to that, right? So we've got most of our brain's functions dedicated to the eyes or whatever. So you made it according to that, we'd come out looking like a cartoon character, right? You know, and anyway, so this is what we are basically. We're cartoon characters in this material world, if you want to put it mildly, and mental cases if you want to put it more harshly. But this is what Krishna means by karshati, struggling. Prabhupada saying grappling hard is how Prabhupada translated it. Grappling hard, fighting with it, karshati, we're struggling. And yet the covering up of material nature, of maya, is so powerful, is so strong, that we think this is actually all lots of fun. We think this is enjoyment. That if we get a little bit of relief, then we think, this is great, this is very nice. This is the power of the material energy. Just like we were discussing at the prison last Saturday. The material energy, it has two functions. The avaranatmaka potency, the covering potency, and the vikshepatmaka, the kicking potency. And it uses these two potencies very intelligently, she does, to make sure that the living entity never gets out of this prison, that we continue our struggle for existence. When we get frustrated with this struggle and we think, I've been through too much, let's go back to Godhead, then she covers us up. She gives us something very nice. She says, look, this material, it's a beautiful place. And did you notice the beautiful wild flowers outside, the sunlight? Who needs God? Yeah? Life is wonderful, life is great. You don't need God for anything. You think, actually it's not so bad. God can be postponed another few years when I'm older. And then when we start getting too comfortable and start enjoying, and then she says, he's having so much fun, I don't like this. And she gives us a hard kick. And we go, flying, and crash, another trauma to go for the subtle body. And we think, oh my God, this is too...
Concussion.
Concussion, yeah. Sorry, for Richard. Richard knows all about this, the kicks of Maya, and what happens when you go flying. You get concussions. It takes us time to recover from these concussions. And we think, oh my God, the material world is a terrible place. Let's find a better place. Let's turn to God. Just before we're trying to do that, she covers up again. And you find this happening so many times, right? So often, this is the nature of the material world, that everyone finds a way to become comfortable and happy in the situation they're in. We all, even the, you know, you can look at the worst situation in this material world, and if you stay in it some time, you begin to take that as the norm. You begin to take, this is the way, see, life, not so bad. And you start finding places for enjoyment. This is good in the sense that this is Krishna's given us a means of survival in this world. That we're able to kind of make pockets of enjoyment everywhere we go, even in the worst of circumstances. But at the same time, it's not good, because it allows us to become complacent in the material world and not endeavor to get out. Yeah, it's a good story. He said once he was Prithu Prabhu, he's a very nice preacher in ISKCON, and he was in Ireland, and he was in this, he's riding this big SUV or Jeep, and all the devotees. So it's kind of rural Ireland, kind of backcountry. And they were all heading up to some kind of a home program or whatever that was. And as they went, now Ireland is, it was, especially at that time, it was very, people hadn't seen Hare Krishnas before, Hindus or foreign people at all, you know. It's kind of, you know, just seeing someone black was shocking, you know, amazing. So it was a very, you know, kind of traditional place. So anyhow, he was going through as they were driving, they had to cross a ditch, a pit area, which was a sewage line had broken there. And the whole place was kind of filled with dirty water, with sewage. And it had kind of spilled onto the road, and they had to drive through it. And as it happens, there were some workers there working, trying to fix it. And when they saw the devotees going by, the shaved heads, saffron robes, they started laughing and laughing and pointing fingers and jeering at them, you know, like construction workers do, making fun and foul language and this and that. And instead of getting angry, Prithviprabhu just laughing, and the devotees were in the van laughing and laughing. Because he said, you know, look at the situation, look at the irony here. Here we're driving in a wonderful SUV, just king of the road. And here these people are halfway, up to their waists, up to their necks, practically, in sewage, you know. And they're laughing at us. Who's laughing at whom, right? Who's making fun of whom? Who's laughable, right? The person up to his neck in sewage, or the devotees who are clean, shaven-headed, blissful, bright-looking? Who's actually laughing, right? So this is the nature of the material world. Even if we're up to our necks in sewage, right, we still find reason to laugh at others, to think our situation. Laughing at others, what does that mean? It means you think your situation very good. You think of your situation as superior, and somehow very acceptable. So even if we up to our necks in sewage, we still think, oh, I'm very happy in this material world. Everything's fine. And you see this, right? The worms, the creatures in garbage, the worms that live in sewage, they don't have a problem with their existence. They don't pity themselves. They don't think, oh, you know, how terrible it is. They're very happy. They're blissful. The dog who's eating a roadkill, he's got a feast. He's happy about that. We may think that's detestable, but not the dog. Everyone finds a way to be happy in the material world. This is what Krishna is saying in verse 9. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of eye, ear, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. So every living entity, we cultivate, according to our consciousness, we create a certain type of subtle body and a certain type of senses. And then we condition ourselves so that when we go into a particular body, we're ready for it. We can actually enjoy those sense objects. So if someone were to say, here, take this, you know, whatever it is, take this roadkill or take this sewage, now enjoy it. We'd go, it's horrible. Why? Is it because these things are not enjoyable? No, they are enjoyable. Just look at those living entities that live in them. They find it very enjoyable. They are enjoyable. It's our senses are not conditioned to enjoy those sense objects. We don't see them as sense objects. We see them as detestable things. On the other hand, if someone gives us gulab jamuns and halwa and things like that, right, we think, aha, this is very nice. This is sense object suitable to us. Right? But you say, you throw the same halwa in front of a pig, and he won't like it. What's this junk you've given me? His senses are not suitable to those sense objects. It's like the English saying, throwing pearls before swine. The pearls are not a sense object. His senses are not conditioned to be able to appreciate that, to enjoy that sense object. We are. Right? So in the course of our life, by going through various experiences, by developing a particular type of consciousness, we condition our intelligence, our subtle body, and our senses in a particular way so that we're creating our next life. We're literally, if you look at your subtle body, we can see exactly what we're going to get in our next life. In other words, we can have the body of a human being, but by the end of our life have created ourselves the subtle body of a dog. So that then it becomes very natural for the spirit soul to enter into the womb of a dog at the end of life. In other words, this is what Prabhupada says, is animals in human form. What does that mean? That people have the subtle bodies of animals, but the physical form of a human being. That doesn't matter. They're heading towards the physical form of an animal because of their subtle body. So if we spend our lives eating detestable things, then we're conditioning ourselves, eating meat, eating blood. Right? We're conditioning ourselves for a very, very appropriate body for that. And Krishna says, look, you've made your future. Prabhupada says in one purport, each one of us has control of our future. We can determine where we're going exactly according to the life we want to live. So this is our situation in the material world. This is the history of the soul so far. But we have a future. We have a choice. We can then continue our history in the same way. This can be our history. This can be our story of mutating our subtle body in one form to another. Or we can get rid of this material, this physical and subtle body altogether. Release the soul. It's like releasing a bird from a cage. It can fly up free. We can do that. This subtle body is like a lead weight on the spirit soul that's dragging it down to this material world. We can get rid of it, free it completely. The spiritual sound vibration, the chanting of the holy name, is so powerful that it's able to cut through. It's the only thing that can cut through these layers and layers of subtle body that we've been collecting over lifetimes. And cut right through it and hit the soul and wake it up and say, where are you? It's the only thing that can communicate to us through the plugs that we were talking about earlier. Through the earplugs, through the blindfold, through the mouth gag, through the virtual reality. It can cut through all of that. It can enter our virtual reality, cut through it, and hit us directly and say, do you remember where you are? Do you remember where you came from? Have you forgotten that you're living in a virtual reality? Have you forgotten your original reality? The spiritual sound vibration. Spiritual sound vibration means this transcendental knowledge coming from the Lord Himself. And most specifically, the holy name of the Lord. It's so powerful that it's the only thing that can shatter our misconceptions, that can destroy this subtle body once and for all. Say, Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasavigra Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Bhinnatvad Nama Namina. Nama Chintamani Krishna's. The holy name of the Lord is like touchstone. It's completely pure and eternally liberated. And it's able to cut through our material conceptions. Why? Because abhinnatvat nama namina. Because there's no difference between the name and the person who is the holder of the name. Namely, there's no difference between Krishna and his holy name. In other words, Krishna is the only one. He's outside the system, you see. None of us can cut through our own suffering or even the virtual reality of others, because we're all plugged up like the next person. So if you're living in a virtual reality yourself, how do you plan to help get someone else out of the virtual reality? And you're all like someone in prison. I'll help you get out. You're in the prison too. How are you going to help someone get out? Krishna's outside the system. He's outside of it. And he sent us something, a powerful tool, which is non-different than him. This is coming directly from the spiritual world. Golokera Premadhana Harinama Sankirtana. This holy name of the Lord is descended directly from the spiritual world. And therefore it's also outside this system. It's not a material sound vibration. The name of the Lord can pierce through this subtle body we've had and relieve us. Once we're relieved, what happens? Sometimes people are afraid, oh my God, I'm free of the subtle body, which means I'm free of the mind, I'm free of the intelligence, I'm free of the ego. What does that mean? I'm free of the mind? Does it mean that I'll become mindless when I become spiritually enlightened? I lack any intelligence? Brainless? Is that spiritual reality? People are afraid. You know, what is this? What do you mean? Actually, someone asked me this. I forget where it was, in what class this was. But someone actually asked me this. He said, oh no, it was in a class I was with Prithupru. And someone asked him this question. He said, isn't that frightening to get rid of your subtle body? Doesn't it become mindless and you become brainless? No, it's not frightening. Because just under this covering, it's like someone in this virtual reality say, but isn't it frightening if you take these goggles off? I won't be able to see anything, I won't be able to hear anything. Of course you'll be able to see, of course you'll be able to hear. Because just below this subtle body, we've got our own senses, our own original senses. We've got our pure mind, our pure intelligence, our spiritual senses that don't decay, that don't get old, that aren't faulty, that don't fail sometimes and work other times, that are able to perceive spiritual reality. These are all there waiting for us. They're just plugged up. So it's not like we go down to nothing. And this is the important point that's Prabhupada's making in the purport to verse 7. This is the difference between us and the impersonalists. We say underneath this virtual reality, there is an original reality. We've got our own senses, we've got our mind, our intelligence, by which we can engage in transcendental activities, spiritual activities, which are full of joy, which are full of bliss. It's not that you peel away the mind and you become mindless. There's nothing there.
Where does the gift come from? I mean, soul itself doesn't have senses.
Yes, it does.
Then why do we say soul is made of sati and alam? Like we say, the body is made of, you know, these five gross elements and
yes.
These subtle elements, that's what your body is.
Yeah.
When we describe soul, we just say sati and alam. We never say, you know, three, these features and
right,
five senses.
Right, right. So, good, very good question. Very good. So, just like we say, the body is made of five elements, right? So you say, what is your nose made of? It's made of the five elements. What's your ears made of? The five elements. So we have five senses, but they're all made of the five elements. In the same way, when we have a spiritual body, that's Satchidananda. Sat, Chit, and Ananda are the three ingredients of which everything is made. Just like in the material world, everything is made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Five ingredients. In the spiritual world, everything is made of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Three ingredients. So if you say, what is your nose made of in the spiritual world? Sat, Chit, and Ananda. What's your ears made of? Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Now you can say, well, what does that mean? You know, what does it mean to have a nose made of eternity? Or knowledge and bliss? Right? What does that mean? But of course it means nothing to us because we're out of touch with that reality. We've forgotten it. It's like someone, if you talk to someone in the spiritual world, and say, oh, they have bodies made of earth, water, fire, and air, and ether. They say, what does that mean? Nose made of earth. And what does that mean? Say, what do you mean? There's not blissful? Then their ears aren't made of bliss? Funny. So it's we have no perception of that reality. So for us, it's inconceivable. But it's there. It's there. It's just like Prabhupada says, like you're wearing this clothing, right? Now, the shape of this clothing, it's not made randomly. It's not like just the tailor randomly made two holes on the sides and a hole on the top for the shirt and just kind of decided. No, he made it according to specifically this kurta. This was tailored, right? So he made it according to my specifications. He cut a neck, he cut arms a certain length, right? So by seeing my kurta, even if you hadn't seen me, by seeing my kurta, if you knew it was tailor-made, you'd have a very good idea of what my dimensions were, right? So in the same way, this material body, five senses, intelligence, mind, ego, all these things are there because we have underlying spiritual senses, spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence, spiritual body. It's all there. We don't have to get it from anywhere. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunai Shavanadi Shuddha Chitti Karayodai. Krishna Prema is there in the heart. It's Siddha. It's already there. You simply have to awaken it. Someone has to come in and knock on the window of our virtual goggles and say, hello, you know, there's someone in there. You've got your own eyes. Peel this blindfold away. Give up these goggles. You can see on your own. You don't need the support of these material senses, material mind. As soon as we realize that, we cut through, we give it away. It's like a bird flying free. We have our own senses, we have our own mind, intelligence, and we can directly engage with Krishna. Like Prabhupada is saying here, we can see Krishna face to face, directly. Yes?
In this existence, when, like what you just said, it seems like if the subtle body has created this body, and the subtle body is all distorted, and the body we've created has all these characteristics and manifestations, you know, like the body itself, the way it's shaped, the way it's formed, and the neural system, and all that, we're not capable of doing that.
Hmm.
It's not capable of doing what, sorry? In this existence, we're not capable of experiencing more than just this physical. Is that true?
No, we are capable of doing that.
With this body?
Yes, by purifying the senses and the mind we have now. To some extent, we'll always be restricted. Right. To some extent, we'll be restricted. But we can, it's like you can make holes in the blindfold, you know? The natural character of the soul can be released by purifying the senses and the mind and the intelligence. Because a more subtle point, as we remember from previous classes, is that the only difference, we said, between the material and the spiritual was that the material was disconnected from Krishna. And as soon as you connect the material energy to the spiritual energy, then to Krishna, then it becomes the spiritual energy. It becomes spiritualized. Because the definition of material is that which is apparently separate from Krishna. Right? So we connect our intelligence, the process of devotional service of bhakti yoga, namely the process of our daily spiritual practice, sadhana, the rounds we chant in the morning, we rise early, we sing for the Lord, we cook for the Lord, we dance for the Lord, all these activities are purifying, slowly, slowly, slowly. They're purifying our mind, they're purifying our intelligence, and they're purifying the senses. So that it's not an all or nothing thing. As we purify, gradually we get little peak holes in our plugged up situation. And we get little glimpses of the soul's natural constitution. So one immediate consequence is that a person becomes naturally happy. That you become more and more blissful, more and more happy. Because as you purify the mind, the intelligence and the soul, you allow the soul's natural qualities to emerge. So you become happier and happier and more joyful and joyful as this process of purification happens.
So like as the material decreases, the transcendental increases.
Yes.
So always limitations of the physical, like the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system and all that, it becomes transformed.
Yes.
Is that what this
is? Yes, yes, exactly. It's a transformation process. That's precisely what it is. That's the process of sadhana. It's like the example given in the scriptures, it's like in alchemy, you can transform bell metal into gold by a certain process of purification, of changing. In the same way, the living entity, by the process of diksha, or spiritual initiation, and then following a spiritual practice under the guidance of a spiritual master after initiation, one can purify the senses and the subtle body we have. Not get free of it completely. To some extent you have to kind of lug it around. But instead of being completely controlled by it, it's something you got to kind of carry with you. You see, there's a difference. It's like, St. Francis of Assisi said, right? This body is an ass we ride through the world. So that's a very different perspective than thinking of yourself as the ass. is our current situation. Our present situation. We see the world through the eyes of the ass. We think this is what the world is. But as someone who's self-realized, realizes, look, I'm just riding the ass. I've got to lug it around. I have to carry it around. But it's not who I am. So there, in that sense, you become liberated, even in this life. It's called jivan mukta sa uchyate. Such a person is called jivan mukta. Everything he does is in relation to Krishna. Jivan mukta means liberated while living. Even in this life. So this is we all have this spiritual body that's directly connected to Krishna, that has a particular relationship with Krishna. Like I was saying last Sunday, it's a unique position we have in the spiritual world, and no one else can fill that position except for ourselves. We each have a unique position. It's an opening, a job opening in the spiritual world, and the only candidate that satisfies the requirements of the job is us. We each have our own position, and it'll stay vacant till we acquire the requisite qualifications. It's like it would be so wonderful, right? if you're going through college, getting your education, and there's already a employment position waiting for you with exactly your description, and it couldn't be filled, it would just wait for you till you got the qualifications necessary to take the job. So it'd be so nice, right? So it's like that in the spiritual world. Krishna's got a job waiting for us. He's got a position for us in the spiritual world that can be, that he's waiting for us to get the necessary qualifications so that we can take up the post.
Does that mean there's a deficiency there? Does that mean there's a deficiency?
Not a deficiency. We've got the qualifications, right? It's there. But we kind of...
I mean, if only we can fill it, means someone is not doing the job there.
Yeah, okay, so this is a good question. Is the spiritual world become imperfect, lose something? So actually this leads to a very nice point. This is the final point I wanted to make anyway, and I was thinking how to connect it. It's excellent. The spiritual world, Krishna says we're all fragmental parts of his. Fragmental parts. Fragment means a broken off piece. So that means that Krishna is the whole, we're parts of him, fragments. And we've fallen down to the material world. That means Krishna has lost something. Is he deficient? Is the spiritual world deficient? Is Krishna deficient? Krishna is the whole, and we're the fragmental parts. Okay? So let's see if I can come up with an example. Okay, so here's an example. Here's a whole piece of paper. And then from this, we make some fragmental parts. Like that. So many. There's unlimited fragmental parts from Krishna, living entities. Okay, so fragmental parts, living entities. Now, where's the piece of paper? It's lost in the fragments. Right? It has dispersed in the fragments. Is this what happens with Krishna? Unlimited fragmental parts coming from Krishna. We all break off. Oh, there's no Krishna. Or he's got some parts missing from him. This is where Srinivas used to be. I'm waiting for him to come back. No, it's not like that. That's the difference between material objects and spiritual things. Specifically Krishna, but any spiritual object. What does the Isha Upanishad say? Om Purnam Adha Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishate. Purnamadaha, Purnamadaha, that is complete. Purnamidam, this is complete. Purnat Purnam Udachyate. From a complete whole is separated. Fragmental parts. Mamai Vangsha. Krishna is using the word ansha here. Ansha, part. So a part is separated. Purnasya Purnamadaya, but when from the whole, a complete whole is taken away, what's left? Purnam eva avashishyati. The whole is still left, the complete is left. 1 plus 1 equals 1. 1 minus 1 equals 1. The whole, each one of us are complete. We're fragments, but we're complete. And Krishna, when he loses these fragments, he loses nothing. In that he's still complete. And yet he still loses something. Namely, he loses the relationship, not loses, is temporarily on hold, the relationship he has with us. That's forgotten. So what he's looking for, again, is that relationship. That's what we can't fill. But otherwise, Krishna's fully perfect. He has nothing to be lost. So this is why Krishna's saying, Mamai Vangsho Jivaloke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The living entity, the fragmental part, is Sanatana. He's eternal. In other words, it's not that we break off and then at some point we merge again and then Krishna's whole relief. No. We eternally separated. This is again against the impersonalist viewpoint. That we're eternally separate, distinct, individual parts of this whole. At no point do we, you know, it's like the impersonalists, they give this analogy. You have water, a whole pool of water. And a certain section of the water, say you have a river or something, a certain section of the river might become frozen. So it takes on individuality, it takes on shape. But as soon as you break the ice, or the sun rises and it melts, you realize you're all actually one. that individuality. In other words, like you have a glass of water and you have ice cubes floating in it. So it looks like the ice cubes are individual, right? But when the water heats up, the ice melts and you realize it's all one. Krishna's saying, it's not like that. We're ice cubes in the water forever. We never melt. The ice cubes stay. We're in the water. We are water. Ice cubes are made of the same thing as the water. But we don't melt at any point. We maintain jiva bhuta sanatana. He said we're eternal. Sorry. He said this earlier in Bhagavad Gita also. Anyone remember? Chapter 2, one of the first things Krishna says to Arjuna. He says, Natve vahang jatunasam natvam neme janadipa nachayeva nabhavishyama sarve vayam ataha param. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Meaning, you are as you are, I am as I am, and they're all as they are. We never lose our individuality and become. All we have to do is re-establish that relationship we've lost. We've all got that unique relationship. It's all there. All we have to do is uncover it. Right now, we're in the body of a man or a woman. Inside that, we're creating another subtle body that may be the subtle body of, say, a demigod or a dog, right? Either way. And then below that subtle body, we have another body, which also could be anything. We could be a cow in the spiritual world. Right? So you can imagine the layers we have. You see? So human being outside, a mentality of a dog, right? But that person may originally be a cow in the spiritual world. So human, dog, cow. And we have to peel away the human, the dog, come to the original role we have. The servants of Krishna, servants of God. Okay, in the order we received, Rex, and then Aja, and Ian.
When you were describing it, it seems like the Mayavadis are not even good scientists. Because when Krishna was describing it, it sounds like a true hologram. The part, when you take it apart, it's still complete. You can tear it up, tear the picture in all the pieces, but it's still there, like a hologram.
Right, it's like these. It's like these. You call them. I forget what you call them in mathematics. You have these shapes or designs, in which each part is the same as the looks the same as the whole. So, like, if you, I forget what you call it. Very common in math. You have like a. You have a big, like you have a big design, say, right? And any section of the design you take, it'll look like the whole design. So it's kind of like embedded in each other, like that. So it's kind of like that, where we're all smart parts is part of the whole. And you put us in or you take us out, but the whole maintains its identity. It stays the same. Very good. They're coming from the whole, in that the whole is the source, but they're eternally separate. What that means is that there's no point in time, you can say, at which the living entity is cut off. Or there's no point in time at which it kind of comes back. Eternity means eternal in this direction, eternal in sanatana, eternal in both directions, beginningless and endless, both. Right? So, in a manner of speaking, yes, we're coming from the Lord. In that, the Lord is our source. We're dependent upon the Lord. Easiest example is that of the sun and the sun rays. You can speak of the sun rays emerging from the sun, coming from the sun. Right? But it's not like at some point there's a sun and then no rays. Okay, and then at some point you see, wow, the rays are coming now. It doesn't work like that. With the sun, there's always the rays. The rays are eternally present. So you can say the rays are coming from the sun, but it's not like there's a point in time in which they separate, they cut off. In the same way, we are eternally there with the Lord. We're eternal, like the Lord is. But we're still coming from the Lord, in one sense.
And how is the divinity a complete whole? How is the divinity a complete whole?
Because we perfectly possess everything we need for we're complete in every way. There's nothing we lack. There's nothing we need to fill. There's nothing we need to gain. We have our senses, we have a mind, intelligence, right? There's nothing you need from the outside. We're full self-standing units. It's like a perfect system. It's like in science, they're perpetually trying to create this perpetual motion machine, right? And it never works because no machine is completely self-sufficient. It always, through friction, you lose energy and the machine slows down, right? But we're perpetual motion machines. We're completely perfect in and of ourselves. We've got the energy. As long as we're connected with Krishna, we just keep moving.
Yes, the completeness is also defined. It's not absolute, but it's defined in relation with Krishna Self.
Yes.
I mean, if you are doing this perfectly for Krishna, you are complete.
Yes.
I mean, might not mean some other absolute definition, complete.
Exactly.
Krishna.
Exactly. Yes, yes, precisely. That very good point. That completeness is defined in relation to the Lord. So in that sense, Srila Prabhupada also says that the material world is also complete and perfect. It's included in this Purnam verse. Yes. It's also one of the complete things coming from the Lord. Because the material world is perfect. It's complete for what it's made for. Right? For its function in relation to the Lord, it's complete, it's perfect. Like a prison house may be complete, it may be perfect. It may not be a nice place to live, but it may function perfectly. It may execute its function perfectly.
So we are complete or perfect for serving Krishna?
Yes, yes, exactly, for our function in service to Krishna. Ian?
Do we get to choose what body we have in
spiritual? Yes, yes. You don't. It's not exactly that you. Basically, in spirit, to answer the spirit of your question, yes, we get to choose, but it's not exactly choosing, because it's who we are. This is, in other words, we're doing exactly what we want to do. If that's what you, if you mean, suppose you say, "I want to be a cow," in the spiritual world, then you will be a cow. Because if you really want to do that, that'll be part who your nature is, you see? So you're doing exactly what your nature is, what you're meant to do. You see what I mean?
You're saying the desire comes only because you are that person.
Exactly, exactly. Whatever desire you have to do it will be because you are that. Because that desire is not imposed on anything else from elsewhere. Like in the material world, we have to choose our body because it's being imposed on us. But in the spiritual world, nothing's being imposed. So you desire something, you are that thing. That's who you are. That's the only reason you desired. So if you want to be a cowherd boy, yes, you are a cowherd boy. Not you will be a cowherd boy. But if you want to be a cowherd boy, you are a cowherd boy. Right? This is who you are. So in the spirit of your question, yes, you do get to choose. But technically it's not a process of choice. It's more a process of discovery of who you already are. Okay, it's 8:30. I think we'll stop there. Thank you very much for your questions. Hare Krishna.